Well, we've always had great fan support, regardless of where we played. There's always been great enthusiasm. I think our fans are a big part of the team. The
Welcome
atmosphere
the
that they
it's
create
Matt, Lars,
you know, during
Justin,
games is, you know, something that's part of the
show. A minute or two afternoon as we get ready to bring you a couple hours. Our guests, Mick Gillespie, will be with us in the second hour. In just a few minutes, we'll go to Alabama beat writer Mike Rodak from AL.com. But we talk about it every day, how hot it is. It's cooler now, and it's going to be a little bit cooler this weekend. In fact, maybe 15 degrees cooler. But I'm leading with weather because of an article that Nick Alvarez wrote on AL.com concerning what Alabama does to monitor the heat. But then you go further south down into the Gulf, and there's Hurricane Idalia, who's already causing problems, mainly in kind of the crook of the Florida panhandle, headed up through there. And already plans are being adjusted as far as the Florida Gators travel. They'll practice today. And the way I read their itinerary, they'll go to Dallas, spend the night there before going to Utah for their opener. So weather has a lot to do with the world of sports always, but especially today. This article that Nick Alvarez wrote is very intriguing. They have these little bitty tabs that they put on the player's tongue, and through their saliva, it measures their hydration. And I found it quite compelling. In addition to the tabs, they have sodium shots, salt packets, Pedialyte. But what really just boggled my mind, Lars, is this was in an interview on The Next Round with Tyler Booker yesterday, and they indicated that Tyler can lose as much as a gallon an hour. I mean, I just think of that.
Yeah, it's really incredible, and a big shout out to Nick Alvarez for writing a really nice piece in AL.com.
Agreed.
And it just shows you that one, everyone needs to take the heat very seriously, and that includes even non-athletes, but especially for the football players. You're out there in pads, it's absolutely boiling, you know, 115 heat index. And Alabama, in so many ways, is on the cutting edge of nutrition, just sports science. And I didn't know anything about this until I read it this morning as well. And it's pretty fascinating. And, you know, so far so good. You haven't heard of any players really suffering any, you know, heat exhaustion, heat fatigue. You just know that they are closely monitored. And I think this will give Alabama a little bit of an edge, sort of, you know, midway later in the season, just because of the conditioning it takes. And, it really is amazing that, you know, that some of the players are labeled, quote, heavy sweaters, unquote, and they produce up to 3.5 liters an hour.
To
five times, yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. It's the linemen, right? It's the big boys that sweat differently just because of their different physiques. And again, this article on AL.com is absolutely fascinating, man.
3.5 liters is equal to 0.95 gallons. A gallon an hour practice is what, two? Man, that is a lot of water lost. But he says, Booker, and he says Alabama and their staff are constantly monitoring this to make sure that they are hydrated. And like Lars just said, apparently they're doing a really, really good job. The deal that I was really interested in is if you don't hydrate. Hey, let me give you a perfect example. This past Friday night, I was doing a high school football game for St. Clair County High School. Our sideline reporter is a guy named Brad Carden, who used to played on their state championship team several years ago. So I asked him in pregame, I said, what do you do to keep hydrated? in the game. And he said, if you're just starting, you're too late. So the whole deal is, Lars, you're drinking water all the time. At night, day, morning, noon, whatever the case may be, you just drink water. Now, you can drink the substitutes or the energy drinks like the Pedialyte and all that kind of stuff. But anybody that keeps up with this is very, very well aware of the fact that water's the best thing. And that's what Alabama's doing. As far as Hurricane Idalia, our prayers and thoughts are going down to the people in Florida as they are certainly having to gear up. I think last I checked, 80-mile-per-hour winds. Of course, as you know, when it gets closer to land, it tends to get stronger. Hope it doesn't get any stronger than that. They are already evacuating certain areas of Florida, and our prayers go there. And I'm sure that Florida's travel is not the only college football game that is going to be affected by the hurricane that is supposed to come in tomorrow on Wednesday. So that's the situation as we go through weather. Now, Lars, you back with me? Justin?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so having some issues here. Yes, so we got through the weather. One thing I wanted to get to right at the top was Justin Thomas. We know how badly he wants to play for the Ryder Cup, and sure enough, Zach Johnson, in a somewhat surprising move. Tripping over my tongue here, picked Justin Thomas as one of the captains pick for the Ryder Cup team, even though Justin Thomas has just had a surprisingly poor season. You know, he's missed the cut in three of the major championships. Former number one player in the world he's just in the midst of a real struggle. But are you surprised? And we'll get back to Alabama football here in a second. But are you surprised that Justin Thomas was picked by Zach Johnson to be on the Ryder Cup?
A little bit. I am. He was not playing well at the end of the year. And, of course, he did just miss that chip. But he hasn't played really very well as of late. But I don't disagree with it either. Justin's one of those guys that wants to fight for his country on the golf course. And he wants a part of that. And his record at the Ryder Cup is quite good. So, as I read in one article this morning, it says, how can you leave that guy behind? You really can't. And you know what I think it's going to produce? It's going to produce one brilliant performance by Justin Thomas. But as Lars, as you talked about when we were discussing this a couple of weeks ago, you know, if Justin's not playing well, you just move him way back down in the lineup, okay? It's not like he's going to be out there playing every day if he's playing bad. They will make adjustments on the fly. So, from a personal standpoint, I'm glad he's playing.
Yeah, me too. And Zach Johnson, you know, he referred to Justin Thomas as, quote, the heart and soul of Team USA, our emotional leader, unquote. And, you know, Justin is really good in Ryder Cup play. He's got a 6-2-1 record. And as well as a 16-5-3 overall record when combined with the President Cups. And so I think that was clearly a huge factor. It's just Justin's past performance. And look, and Justin's acknowledged that the last few weeks have been really difficult. You know, he narrowly missed qualifying for the FedEx Cup playoffs. Remember, he tied for 12th at the Wyndham Championship, where just if he would have been one stroke better, he would have gotten in. And he finished 71st in the final standings. And as I mentioned, he missed three cuts in the majors, including the Open in July. Two times he shot 80s in the 80s in the majors. And he hasn't won since 2022, the PGA Championship, which was his second major. And just in 2023, this year, he only has one top five finish. So, I think this is just a sort of a gut feel that Zach Johnson is going with. And I honestly think he made the right call. And I know that, you know, some players are really disappointed that Justin got in. But hey, it's Zach's call, and also Brooks Koepka. He was also a captain's pick, somewhat surprising because he moved to the LIV Golf League, and that was viewed as a kind of a potential roadblock to his inclusion. But you know, the Zach Johnson had to overlook that because of Koepka's overall championship record, and he's really well liked among his teammates, and that is a big role too. You know, how does everybody get along? What is the group dynamic? And I know that went into Zach Johnson's thinking.
I think they'll pull together, although I'm not real fond of the idea of putting a LIV golfer on there. I guess they're setting all the feelings aside, and they're going to fight and play for the old red, white, and blue. Well, Brando did it again. Oh, my. Timmy B. We'll talk about that with Mike Rodak and all on the other side of the break as you listen to Big Noon Sports presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
Hey, this is Reagan, owner of R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion in downtown Tuscaloosa, located at 2703 6th Street across from the Home 2 Suites. Come down to R&R and see why we're the ultimate cigar and bourbon experience. With over 165 bourbons and 5 private barrels, our selection of bourbon is unmatched. We have the best cocktails around, and our cigar selection is legendary. Our lounge and service are world-class. Come and experience the luxury of the mansion and see why it's a world-renowned cigar and spirits destination.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky cloudy at times. Will maintain the chance of a few passing showers or thunderstorms this afternoon and tonight. The high today 87, tonight's low 71. Tomorrow a mix of sun and clouds, the better chance of rain south and east of here. The high 86. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 85 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Back on Big Noon Sports, I'm Matt Coulter, along with Lars Anderson and Justin Jones as our producer. I guess you saw this tweet from Tim Brando, who was with us yesterday. And in short, he said, by not releasing a depth chart, Nick Saban is bullying Alabama's media and the local media. And I actually understand where he's coming from. But if Brando's going to scold Saban, he needs to scold Jimbo and Brian Kelly, too, because they haven't released one either. Here's the deal. Many people, I know fans like to look at depth charts. But if you're a member of the media, that's critical info. And if you are a member of the media that's calling the game, like an Eli Gold, Lars, that is the first and most important document. Now, you receive a lot when you're preparing for a game, but it all starts and ends with a depth chart, because you've got to be able to look down at that chart, see who's in, see who's coming out, and it is critical. But I'm pretty sure they're going to give one to Eli. In fact, he's probably already got one. He's already filled out his charts. But others that need the depth chart for stories or particularly for broadcasting purposes, I don't like it, but I would not go nearly as far as to say he's bullying anybody. He kind of bullies the local media anyway, doesn't he? Every once in a while, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could probably label it that. Michael Casagrande, our good buddy at AL.com, has a really fun story about the depth chart, and he calls it Depth Chart Monday, right? That's what it used to be, because just seconds before Nick Saban would step up to the podium, the sheets of paper would circulate through the press room, and he wrote, rest in peace, cause of death, annoyance. And I thought it was just a really clever line. You know, Saban, he threatened to do it last year, right? When he went on his sort of opening I think it was right before the season opener against Utah State. And, he was annoyed with the questions. He was annoyed that how the players, reacted to the depth chart. And, in his mind, it's always just sort of a living, breathing organism. Nothing is ever set in stone, to use his phrase. And, I think we're going to see more of this. I mean, it's just, there are three teams in the SEC that don't release depth charts. And, I do think, unfortunately, it's just one more thing that's going to be taken away from the media. And I remember as a kid, I loved just looking at the three deep or four deep and really just analyzing the different, what are different freshmen? Where are they? I really loved it. I mean, I would study the depth chart like it was, a complex piece of art. And just look at everything. And I just couldn't get enough of, just trying to do my own little analysis as a 12-year-old kid of different depth charts. But do you think, Matt, that this is really getting a lot of play nationally? Do you think that this is a story, or is it a non-story, to be honest?
Well, he's preventing information that fans want, But, he has his reasons. Mike Rodak is with us from AL.com, and we'll let him jump right in on this. Mike, first of all, how you doing? Life good?
Doing well, yeah.
Do you use a depth chart?
It's one of those things where you already sort of know it, especially as the season goes on. You kind of know Will Anderson's a starter, Bryce Young's a starter. It becomes background later in the year. I think it's, the most important week or the most important day of the depth chart is when it comes out. And they're still going, by all everything I understand, there's still going to be a depth chart. It's just not going to come out until Saturday. So that delays it by 4 days. But, there's still a depth chart reveal, so to speak, on Saturday. So, I have a few thoughts on it. It's one of those things where, coaches are always looking for every little edge or every little tweak or, improvement they can make. And in Nick Saban's mind, this seems to be one of the things that he can do better for his team, or where his team can do better is not being distracted, as he said, by a depth chart the first week of the season. And by all accounts, it was an issue last year. That's where I think he's coming on it from, but it's, everybody still knows. The players are on the field. They know who's lining up with the first team. They know who's lining up with the second team. I think it's maybe more the public embarrassment aspect of it, that this depth chart comes out and you see a guy's on the second team when everybody thought he's on the first team, and everybody's talking about it, and there's news stories about it, and there's questions about it. And I think that's what they are more concerned about than the actual what's on the piece of paper. And on our end, too, it's like, we don't need a depth chart. Like, again, we kind of know how things are for a certain extent, but it's one of those traditions too. It's one of those things that's always been around. Michael Castagnoli said, there's always that day when they pass it out, and it's just kind of part of the tradition and part of the routine. So, I don't think it's a big deal either way. I kind of see where they're coming from on it, but at the same time, it's like, I don't think it's going to win them or lose them any games doing what they're doing.
Mike, I really appreciated how you finessed a question yesterday to Coach Saban.
Really
about Jalen Milroe, yes. Would we have witnessed an eruption of Mount Saban if you had asked him point blank who's going to start a quarterback?
Yeah, there's an art to that. I think, certainly the expectation is Jalen Milroe will start, but, when you're asking the question, in my standpoint too, it's like, I think I framed it as, how has he improved since spring? So Saban's not going to look at it as, you're trying to get him to reveal something, you're assuming something negative or anything like that. And, he kind of can take the question where he wants to go with it. And, sometimes he'll ask that question and he'll give a glowing answer on how the player's gotten better. I think that was the case yesterday. And then sometimes he'll ask that question and you'll not really give a great answer, which is kind of a sign that maybe that player hasn't improved. So that's kind of the way to get into the topic without offering trigger words or kind of getting him off track. Because, you know, sometimes you say a certain word in your question to him and he'll really latch on to that, and it just kind of derails the entire conversation because he's focused on that one word or that one aspect of your question, and he's not really answering your actual question. So, again, yeah, I think through that we're able to see that Nick Saban seems to be higher on Jalen Milroe than maybe he was, you know, after the Texas A&M game last year when he didn't seem to be all that high on him, which through that we can kind of surmise that, as we predicted, that Jalen Milroe will probably start on Saturday.
And what do you think the plan will be? Do you have any guess as to the order? Will we see all four, including Dylan Lonergan?
I would be surprised to see all four. My expectation is to see at least two. And I think, you know, obviously Saban, he was asked about that yesterday as well, about expectations about playing multiple quarterbacks going in. I think he said, you know, he doesn't have any expectations. I think part of that is along the respect the opponent mantra. We all saw what Middle Tennessee did to Miami last year, I believe it was. And, you know, you don't want to get yourself into a situation where, you know, the game's not going well against Middle Tennessee and you're not going to play any backups because you really need to win the game. And then everybody's going to say, well, you know, you planned on playing two quarterbacks. What happened? So he doesn't really want to back himself into that corner. That's how I interpreted that answer. But I would expect Ty Simpson to play at some point. Whether it's, you know, dividing series, I don't think it's going to be like back and forth between Milroe and Simpson, but I think we could see Simpson maybe here or there early in the game and then maybe, you know, play the third quarter or something like that. In terms of the third guy, I wouldn't be shocked if a third guy gets in. I would be, the biggest question for me is that third guy going to be Buckner or is that third guy going to be Lonergan? You know, probably Buckner at this point, given he has more experience, you kind of want to see what you have in him. But even then, you know, let's say a third quarterback gets into the game in the fourth quarter, 80% of the time he's just going to be dropping back and handing the ball off to, you know, running back. So I don't know how much we're going to learn, but I would say at least two quarterbacks. We'll see.
Mike, you cut your teeth dealing with the coach that Henry, is that what a good word for Belichick? What is,
yeah.
Is he? Saban's a prince compared to Bill. So, on a local level, does Saban treat? I'm asking you point blank here. Does he treat the media okay?
Yeah, I'd say for the most part. You know, I think it's a different approach that Bill Belichick takes. He's a man of few words. You know, especially when he's not wanting. Or not liking a question or not wanting to answer something, he's just not going to say very much. It's just kind of going to be a grunt and, you know, I don't know, I'm not sure. Like, it's very few words that will come out of his mouth. Nick Saban, if he doesn't like a question or he doesn't like, you know, a particular situation, is going to be more explosive and he's going to say a lot of words and he's going to get very angry and he's going to go on and on and on about it. So it's a much different approach, kind of to the same situation. But, you know, I think in general, yeah, I mean, there's times when he kind of meanders and doesn't really want to talk about injuries or doesn't want to talk about, you know, depth chart questions. There's other times when he's giving pretty good answers and giving pretty good insight. You know, I think the one thing I think people get wrong is, you know, they always say there's a ulterior motive or, you know, he's always, there's some secret, point that he's trying to make to his players that might not be the truth. Like I honestly think Nick Saban's very honest. I think a lot of what he says is the truth. I don't think he's hiding things. And I don't think it's all part of some grand scheme to send a message to his players all the time. I think that part of it gets overrated with him.
Mike, on Saturday, Sam Hartman for the quarterback at Notre Dame, just lit up Navy, 19 of 23, 251 yards, tied a school record for a debut with four touchdown passes. And then on Monday, he revealed that, as we know, Hartman transferred from Wake Forest. He revealed that Auburn was after him and Alabama was after him. Do you deduce anything from that, that Alabama was going hard or appears to have been going after Sam Hartman?
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely in the quarterback market, and I think it would be a huge stretch to say that Tyler Buchner was their first choice. I think that's obvious to anybody. I don't think that's, a big secret that they probably put some feelers out on Drake May. You know, he wasn't in the transfer portal, but there's ways of finding out if he would be willing to, if he wanted to go to Alabama. I mean, Tyler Van Dyke was another one at Miami. Sam Hartman would be another one. Did they put out any feelers on Talia? I don't know. Like, Alabama and Auburn were both pretty active in the quarterback market. And it's like free agency in the NFL. You got to put some calls out and see what people's prices are. And, they were able to get Tyler Buchner to come at whatever price it was. And, at this point, it doesn't really seem like it's going to bear too much fruit for him. But I think if it was a Drake May or maybe even a Sam Hartman who came in, then maybe that's your starter right now. Maybe it's a different situation.
Our guest is Mike Rodak from AL.com, and we'll continue on the other side of this break.
Looking for...
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
And also want to mention Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker. She sponsors some of our Alabama interview segments, the Bama broker, Advantage Realty Group. I want to ask you, Mike, a little bit about the Blue Raiders of Middle Tennessee State. This is not your everyday run-of-the-mill patsy or pancake, as it's called. This is a team that beat Miami last year. And do you need to get your baby?
Oh yeah, he's in the background. Sorry about him.
The more the merrier, especially with their children. But how good
he's
is this team?
He's homesick today.
Oh, bless him.
Middle Tennessee is I think you said in the Miami game last year, but they're different than you think. Some of these cupcake teams, if you will, come into Tuscaloosa. It seems like a lot of the time, they don't have a passing game that they're going to run the triple option and try to just run the ball all day. Georgia Southern famously, and Mercer came in a couple years ago. Not that Middle Tennessee is an FCS team, but they're totally different. I mean, they're a spread offense. It's a lot of shotgun, four wide receiver looks. It's somewhat like Mississippi State in that regard in terms of what their personnel is and what they're trying to do offensively. So it's going to be a team that's going to try to throw against you. And so I would expect Alabama to have five or six defensive backs on the field much of the game. Like, this is not a game where you're going to see, the big heavy fronts and three or four defensive linemen as sometimes you see against, these opponents. This is going to be a more of a wide open offense and might try to run up tempo. They're going to throw the ball down the field. So that's, a different challenge, I think. Sometimes that gets them a little bit. That up-tempo offense, that spread offense has gotten Alabama sometimes too. So that's what I'm interested in seeing. And there's going to be a lot of defensive backs we're going to see and kind of get a chance to evaluate, not only the six starters, if you will, but also, assuming this game gets to a point where we're going to see a lot of backups, we're going to see six backup defensive backs too. So it's a good evaluation for guys like Caleb Downs and, you know, the transfers coming in, Jalen Key and Trey Amos, and, you know, freshmen like Tony Mitchell, maybe he'll get on the field. So that's really what I'm interested in seeing is, you know, kind of how they stack up against that passing offense.
Mike, I don't know if you're in the prediction business, but it's that time of year, as you know. Have you written a story or do you have thoughts on who your four teams would be right now that will make it into the playoffs?
You know, I think sometimes people overthink those things. And, you know, maybe last year you can say TCU was a surprise. Nobody really had them at the beginning of the year. But I'm still one of those people who would be surprised if it's not Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, Michigan. And that's, you know, two Big Ten teams, two SEC teams. But even last year, for instance, like, were those the best four teams in college football? Like, you can make a case. Like, you could make a case that Alabama might have been a better team than TCU and might have played Georgia tougher if that, you know, ended up being a matchup. So to me, those are still the best four teams in college football. Obviously, Alabama has something to prove against LSU this year. You know, Michigan, Ohio State play each other on the schedule, but as we've seen before, they can both get into the playoffs. So it's hard for me just to get wild and crazy with the playoff when I think college football is still very top heavy in the sense that there's not a whole lot of teams competing, truly competing for those four playoff spots. And, you know, maybe there's a, you know, an Oregon or a Texas or somebody a little bit different that squeaks in. But I, again, at the end of the day, if we're picking the four best teams, I think those are still them.
And how about the ACC? It's really a kind of, I view it as a two horse race between Clemson and Florida State. And I like Clemson. I think Clemson's got a shot to sneak into the playoffs. But just your thoughts on the top of the ACC.
Yeah, you know, Clemson's interesting. A team that probably hasn't adapted well to the portal and kind of what college football has been the last couple of years and fallen off to some extent. But still talented, still a really good coach, like still has every chance in the world to win that conference. But, you know, you could still see them tripping up as they've done the last couple of years, a game or two. And you lose one game in the ACC and you're going to be in a tough spot to make the playoff. Same thing with Florida State. Let's say Florida State loses to LSU this weekend. All of a sudden, you know, they can still go undefeated, win the ACC, and with that one loss to LSU, still be in a tough spot to make the playoffs. So that's kind of the state of that conference. And, it hurts them a little bit that they're not considered anymore to be in that same category as the SEC and the Big Ten. And as we continue to have years and years go by and everybody keeps talking about the SEC and Big Ten being the two power conferences, that's where I think the playoff teams are going to come from. If those people are sitting down in the room saying the best four teams are probably going to come from those two conferences.
Mike Rodak from AL.com is our guest here on Big Noon Sports. Mike, it is more than a given that Georgia is likely going to win the East. Who's your second and third in that division?
You know, I still think Tennessee is a team to watch out for. I know everybody says, oh, you know, they lost Hendon Hooker, they lost Jalen Hyatt. They lost some of that firepower they had offensively, but Joe Milton's capable as a quarterback. I mean, he's the path for him to get there has certainly been winding, but if you tell me at the end of the year that he's offensive player of the year in the SEC or, you know, first team all SEC quarterback, I don't be shocked. Like, I think he has that sort of talent, and Josh Heupel's system does seem to produce those sort of quarterbacks. So, you know, Tennessee's right there. You know, after that, South Carolina, I think, is the trendy pick, you know, being a sort of top 25 team on people's radar right now, but it could be them. It could be Kentucky. If they come along, and that, you know, is a sneaky, I don't want to say tough road trip for Alabama, but that November trip up to Lexington is at least a little bit interesting to me. So yeah, I think there's four teams at the top of that division that, you know, I would think are in good shape. I don't love Florida and the direction they're going, and obviously there's Vandy and Mizzou, but it's probably going to come down to Tennessee, South Carolina, Kentucky, I'd say, for that number two spot.
Mike, one more question. Let's go. You know, we got interviews coming up here. going back to Belichick and your days for it with ESPN and covering the Patriots, is there one particular meltdown that you can recall, or are there too many?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really melt down in the way that Saban does. Like, Saban's just, you know, once he kind of gets on a roll, it's hard to stop him. Belichick shuts down so much, and, you know, there's been obviously scandals up there, and I didn't really personally, I wasn't there for any of them. You know, Spygate was a few years before me, and then Deflategate was a few years after me, but any of those press conferences after that, when, and I've been there too, when, you know, the local TV station sends their investigative reporter, or, you know, there's national NBC News type people, anytime there's those sort of investigative questions, I mean, he just will give you absolutely nothing. Sometimes it's just the sound coming out of his mouth. So it's not really a meltdown as much as it is him really turtling up and going into a shell.
Really interesting stuff, Mike. Good luck with your interviews. Not that you need it, because you certainly know how to pose a question. Have a great day. I hope your little girl feels a little bit better here.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Mike Rodak, I truly can say he's one of the best out there. No question about it. He knows what he's doing, knows how to do it. All right. Something happened in Major League Baseball last night that it made my jaw drop, and not in a good way. You know, I don't know if you've seen the video or not. It's very scarce, but it was scary. We'll talk about it in a minute on Big Noon Sports.
On the next Inside the Locker Room with Coach Wimp Sanderson and Barry Sanderson.
Tune in Wednesday. We will talk with Bill Cameron at 8:15. We'll find out what's going on down on the plains of Auburn. We'll also discuss depth chart and the big game with Middle Tennessee coming up this weekend.
Inside the Locker Room, weekdays 7 to 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com. 100.9 Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky cloudy at times. We'll maintain the chance of a few passing showers or thunderstorms this afternoon and tonight. The high today 87, tonight's low 71. Tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds, the better chance of rain south and east of here. The high 86. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 85 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hope you're having a good day. Next hour, the Mick Gillespie will join us. I certainly want to get his thoughts on what happened last night in the seventh inning at Coors Field. Ronald Acuna is right fielder, Ronald Acuna Jr., and he's standing there, and suddenly there's a fan next to him, and evidently he's trying to take a selfie. This is during the game, folks. He's trying to take a selfie with Ronald Acuna Jr., and, of course, security is there in a heartbeat, and they get that guy away, and then another fan comes over the stands in right field along the line and just comes flying up into the pile of humanity and knocks Acuna on his keister, knocks him down. And go to, just Google Acuna attacked, and you'll get the video on it. But it's scary that people can get that access. You know what's really scary is that we have people in the world that think that's acceptable. It is not acceptable. And it's horrible, and it's scary. And you think, you know, on the other side, Lars, you really want to get, what if they'd had some kind of a weapon, or, you know, I don't know how you make it more secure, because it's pretty darn secure in most ballparks. That obviously wasn't the case last night, but, you know, fan behavior is just getting worse and worse and worse. On a little bit of a funny note, if you watch the video to its conclusion, you'll see the second fan in a white shirt and a white ball cap literally being taken off the field as if he were a seven-year-old. He was literally, what's the term, screaming and scratching, or screaming and yelling. Man, he was fighting those security guards like he was really going to be able to get away. There were like two or three on him. But I've certainly made my opinion known, and I don't know anybody that would disagree that that's just awful. And what's going to happen here is they'll react by probably lowering consumption of alcohol, which they may stop in the seventh inning. Maybe that's why the guy was angry. I don't know. But the end result is they make it worse on everybody else. They're going to probably end up having to put up fences, you know, the rush the field deal. And certainly Acuna is not the first ball player to be rushed in several different sports. But, Lars, I know you just texted me and said it was just very, very scary, and I think that's about as appropriate as it gets.
Yeah, it the first image that popped into my mind was Monica Seles, the tennis player getting stabbed in the back as she was during a crossover or during a break in the match at the, I think it was the French Open. But about 3 or 4 years ago, I did a really long story on streaking. Right. And I use streaking as a general term, not necessarily taking your clothes off, although that still happens. But just running onto the field and what happens how can streaking change your life? And it turned out to be a really fun story. But there is also a very serious side to this, because back in the 80s and 90s, you know, running onto the field for the most part was just viewed as harmless fun, right? And those caught were often let go without even being handcuffed. But these are the days before Facebook and Twitter, you know, before social media, a person, you know, flush with liquid courage could run in the buff at, say, Yankee Stadium on a Saturday night and then go to work on Monday morning without their bosses knowing about it. But now things are a little bit different. If you do choose to run onto a field, and especially if you are if you don't have your clothes on, or you are don't even have part of some of your clothes on, you can be charged with a indecent exposure. Excuse me. Yeah. Indecent exposure. And it can also land you on the sex offender registry in many states. Right. And also, you know, if you just run onto the field now, you are going to be the water cooler talk in every office in your region, because you will be outed on social media. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You will be outed. And I remember I talked to this young man who he didn't want to participate in the story, but he allowed me to quote him. And he said, I can't talk about what I did because I work at a conservative company and my bosses were livid when they found out about it on Twitter. And if I talk about it, they'll be fired. And then I also contacted a young woman who had disrupted a sporting event with a dash onto the field, and she told me that she got death threats over social media, and so she was like, you know, I'm sorry, I just can't get into the specifics of my story, and she's like, I didn't even think about the consequences, I just thought it would be fun. And then, you know, she went on to tell me that there were big consequences because now everyone knows what you did almost the instant you did it. And so, the common denominator is booze, obviously. And in some cases, you know, there are instances where it's pre-planned, but for the most part, it is a spur of the moment decision fueled with alcohol, and it's usually not a good it's never a good decision, but I think the larger point I'm trying to make is that the stakes are just higher now because you can't just anonymously get away with it, because you will be outed on social media.
It's often, I would think, maybe 90% of the time, it's hey, Bubba, hold my beer. You know, that old saying, I'm getting ready to do something real stupid. And that's exactly what happened. But you remember
right,
back.
Those are like famous last words. Hold my beer. Yes. Watch this.
Yeah. Hold my beer. That's exactly right. But, you know, we've come such a long way from, I think it was a pretty harmless deal. You remember Morgana?
Yep, the kissing bandit.
It was kind of hard to miss her, by the way, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to go into great detail, but I think she kissed Pete Rose once, George Brett, maybe Tug McGraw. But, I mean, everybody knew what was coming, and everybody laughed about it. Even the players laughed about it. Nobody's laughing when two guys come in from the outfield and physically assault. Although they didn't throw any fists or anything like that. But Acuna did end up getting knocked down. And a situation like that, you imagine if he'd gotten hurt and couldn't play? I mean, I would think you could own those people's houses and cars and whatever else they wanted to go after. And they may still. What do you think they'll do to them?
Oh, I'm sure they spent the night in jail, and they're going to have to appear in court, face a judge. And, it depends on, you know, what the judge wants to charge them with. But going back to the piece that I wrote, I framed it around this guy named Jimmy Long, and I didn't know we were going to talk about this today, but it's an interesting story. I framed it around Jimmy Long, who was a veteran of the Iraq, of Iraqi war. And when he came back home, he was struggling with the depression, and he had just big time sort of post deployment issues. And he had trouble, you know, just had trouble reintegrating. And so he felt this, and he had suicidal thoughts. And he felt this kindred, he felt a closeness to other veterans. And so what he did during the Army-Navy game is he planned this out. He wrote the number 22 on his back. It was spray painted. He had a buddy spray paint the number 22 on his back. And the 22 represented the number of veterans who commit suicide every day. And so he ends up running. He goes the full length of the field during the Army-Navy game. President Trump is there. And he got a ton of exposure. So you know what happened after this is he becomes sort of this like celebrity among veterans because of what he did. And this streak, it gave him a sense of purpose in his life because people reached out to him and saying that they're struggling with depression and suicidal thoughts. And it absolutely changed his entire life because he decided to make a stand for all veterans and publicize the fact that a lot of people are struggling. And that's why, again, the number 22, was on his, spray painted on his back, but he ran the length of the field and then he came back and ran another length of the field. And he was so tired after running 200 yards. He's like, gosh, can't they just come and tackle me now? But, you know, he got thrown in jail. And he had to appear in court, and because he was a veteran, though, the judge just she just gave him a slap on the wrist, like really nothing. But that to me, I you don't ever want to advocate someone running onto a field, but you know there was a higher purpose in what Jimmy Long did.
That's a very compelling story and one I had not heard. Sounds to me like they should have lined him up a tailback in the wishbone.
I know.
Give him the football.
Huh? Yeah, he was great. I would just he lives up in Tennessee, small town in Tennessee, and I went up there and we met and we had a couple beers and man, we talked for about 5 hours and he just told me his whole story. And, you know, it's stories like this, like Jimmy and I became friends and I still am in touch with him to this day. And, you know, he's very grateful that I wrote it and it got a lot of exposure. I think got over 1 million reads on Bleacher Report and CNN. It's always cool to do stories like that, Matt, where you end up sort of enriching your own life because of who you met, and the relationship spills over beyond just the story that appears.
Well, then here comes my obvious question. When is he going to be on?
Hey, man, we should have him on. That's a great idea. I will text him.
You did an incredible job, and I will read the prose eventually here, but you did a great job of verbalizing it on radio and streaming. But to hear his firsthand account and what the effect was.
I'll text him here, and, you know, maybe we could have him on for an extended time tomorrow to talk about it, because it is utterly fascinating. And I skipped over a lot of detail here. But it was a fun story. But yeah, I'll effort to get Jimmy Long on tomorrow.
If you'd like to join the party, call us at 205-342-9904. We'll break and come back just a tad after one. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, this
24/7. You'll find road and utility crews, tow truck, law enforcement, and first responders working along Alabama's roadway.
We're making improvements and helping our communities stay connected.
We're working hard to make sure you're safe on the road. Now we need your help to make sure we're safe too.
Alabama's move over law requires you to move over a lane when you see flashing lights on the roadside. And if you can't safely move over, please slow down.
Visit drivesafealabama.org, brought to you by the Alabama Department of Transportation, Alabama Broadcasters Association, and this station.
Go inside the Alabama Crimson Tide with the Gary Harris Show.
Hey, it's Gary Harris. Coming up Wednesday on the Gary Harris Show at 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 FM. Matt Coulter with the NASCAR report as we enter the NASCAR playoffs. Can't wait for that. And Andrew Bone, Bad of the Bone, will join us for the Bama Football Recruiting Report. That and more.
Catch the Gary Harris Show Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
WTUG HD2 Northport and W265 CG Tuscaloosa,
a Town Square Media station.
One man to beat, you can forget about it. Touchdown, Alabama.
Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
I don't have any expectations for that right now. I mean, you know, we're going one day at a time. And, you know, we're repping the players. And even regardless of what happens in this game, it's the same thing that I told you guys before. Just because whoever starts in the first game, that doesn't mean that you don't have to continue to compete and play throughout the season, because the competition doesn't end with the first game at any position, including quarterback. So, you know, my expectation is what can we do to get them better today so that we can play better the next day and the next day. And then when the game comes, we'll be playing as well as we need to be playing to create value for themselves as players, as well as our team to be able to have success.
That's Nick Saban on what else but the quarterback room at the University of Alabama. Lars, do you see anywhere in the next, you know, 3-4 games somebody will break away? Or is there an off chance that they actually do play a couple of quarterbacks?
Well, I think one quarterback will ultimately, you know, take the reins and win the team, right? To use Nick Saban's phrase. And it really makes a lot of sense. And we've seen that happen repeatedly throughout the Saban era. And I was just trying to think of has the two quarterback system ever really worked in college football? Or has it ever really worked in pro football? I think in the NFL, gosh, I go back to who was it? It was Miami with Don Strock and David Woodley with Don Shula,
because
right?
Gracie was hurt.
yeah, right. But it just it usually just doesn't work. I mean, you want one guy to be the leader, right? You want to take ownership of the team, and I anticipate it's going to be Jalen Milroe. That is my guess, and it is purely a guess. I mean, nobody knows, because nobody knows how everyone is going to play once the whistle blows in a live game. You know, it's just the intensity ratchets up. I mean, you know, anyone who's played sports knows that practice, even a scrimmage of any sort, whether it's a basketball or soccer or you know, anything, any sport, it's just different when it's game day, right? When it matters, everything is just, it happens quicker. And there is more physical, and everybody's more focused, and you know, it's almost just like a completely different animal. And so you just have to see who responds best to that environment, and I think after Texas we'll have clarity. I really do. I mean, I think that is when a quarterback is going to win the team, because the quarterback, whoever it is in that game, is going to have to play well for Alabama to win that game. I mean, I think we all agree that Quinn Ewers is a terrific quarterback for Texas. I mean, he may be the best quarterback that Alabama faces all year. He will present some challenges to that Alabama defense. And so you would think that Alabama is going to need to score some, points in that game, right? Who's the best at, you know, managing the game? Who's the best at taking care of the ball? And eventually, I mean, you can call, like, you know, someone like AJ McCarron a game manager all you want, but you know what? When he needed to make a play, he made a play. Right? I mean, there are just times that you...
Especially when they cut him loose. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you just got to let it rip. And you got to take some chances. You have to take calculated chances, I guess. But, and it all happens so fast. But what's your opinion? Do you think you could go a whole season with playing two guys? I mean, especially if it's two guys with different skill sets.
Well, I go back to the adage I may have, you know, blurted out yesterday or last week. And if you have two quarterbacks and you really have none, I'm a big believer in the one quarterback system. And you just asked a question a minute ago. Can you name me a team that successfully used two quarterbacks? The only one that immediately came to mind was Florida. Does that count with Chris Leak and Tim Tebow?
Yeah.
But it's a tough question.
Nebraska won a national championship with Brooks Berenger and Tommy Frazier when Tommy Frazier had blood clots, and played both of them. Oh, Tommy Frazier is in my mind, he's the best college football player of all time. But I'm
of
biased.
All time.
Oh yeah,
really? He won back-to-back national championships, didn't he?
Yep. I think he's still running against Florida and Steve Spurrier.
You would put Tommy Frazier ahead of Stetson Bennett the fourth.
Well, they do have one thing in common. They both won two national championships as starting quarterbacks.
Yep. Did he have any type of NFL career?
None.
I really don't remember.
No.
He didn't go play safety or something?
No. I think he went to Canada for a little bit, and I think he was back in Nebraska as a coach in, I think, high school. He's gained a lot of weight. He's a big man now, but I'll always.
Back when Osborne was running the veer.
The option, the trip. Yeah, the option. Yep.
I have a quick question for you guys. Do you think that Alabama's offense with Jalen and Tua could technically be called a two quarterback system? It's just we were beating people so bad
for two games.
Switch
for two games.
Yeah, I guess you're right. A championship and an SEC championship.
Yeah, yeah. And both had significant contributions that led to Alabama's win. I think for a little while, I really can't remember an Alabama system that they used to. I think maybe in the early 80s it was Don Jacobs and Walter Lewis. Maybe Alan Gray was in there. Alabama was one run the wishbone back then. So they would run in a few different quarterbacks. But they always had a starter. Always had a starter.
Justin, when you look back at that Alabama team that with Tua in the, you know, the second and 26, the walk-off touchdown for the national championship, who in your mind is the starting quarterback of that team?
Leading up to second and 26, it's Jalen.
All year, right? Yeah, in your memory, it's like, well, that was Tua. Won the national championship.
I mean, with what Tua did in the Natty, you forget about everything before. Yeah, you're exactly right. And so, really, it's Tua you think of. But I mean, Jalen Hurts got us there. So, it kind of blows away everything else when you do the one play to win the ring.
When you author the greatest single play in college football history, when the stakes are the highest and you would just deliver a beautiful throw to future Heisman Trophy winning wide receiver. Yeah, you're going to be remembered for that.
In my eyes, the year after where Tua started, though, it was almost like baseball. Like our starting pitcher was Tua, and then, I mean, we were up by 50 regardless of the game. But then we would bring in Jalen Hurts to, close us out with the fastball.
It's called mop up. If you're up by that much, you just go out there and throw strikes. let's get outs. But the different situation with that example is that was not by design. That was by necessity. They did not go into those games thinking we're going to play two quarterbacks. Would y'all agree?
Yes. Yeah.
Definitely.
There is some quarterback news at Ohio State. Ohio State is dealing with the same issues that Alabama is, and Ryan Day announced just this morning that they're going to go with Kyle McCord, who's a junior, but he's also going to play Devin Brown during Saturday's game. And I think it's interesting because Ohio State and Alabama, their situations just mirror each other because C.J. Stroud was, the number two overall pick after Bryce Young went number one. And so Ryan Day is again, dealing with the same issues that Nick Saban is. But according to Day, it's going to be McCord just because he has shown more consistency. But Day is not naming a starter for game two. Like you got to go out there and perform, just like Nick Saban is asking his guys to do that in game one.
Did Ryan Day have a depth chart?
Yes, I believe. He did put a depth chart out.
All right. When we get back, we'll talk to the one and only Mick Gillespie. Talk about that baseball incident last night with the Atlanta Braves. Of course, we'll talk a lot about Alabama football, too. You're listening to Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
If you're securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
On the next Inside the Locker Room with Coach Wimp Sanderson and Barry Sanderson.
Tune in Wednesday. We will talk with Bill Cameron at 8:15. We'll find out what's going on down on the plains of Auburn. We'll also discuss depth chart and the big game with Middle Tennessee coming up this weekend.
Inside the Locker Room, weekdays 7 to 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Work is a part of all of us. Working drives us to push beyond what we thought was imaginable and allows us to come together again for the things that really matter. That's why the Alabama Department of Labor and the Alabama Career Center System is here to help you discover bigger opportunities than ever before. Visit your local career center or alabamaworks.alabama.gov. Funding provided by the USDOL, PTA, and Federal WIOM, an Equal Opportunity Employer Program. Auxiliary aids and services available upon request. Brought to you by this station and the Alabama Broadcasters Association.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky cloudy at times. We'll maintain the chance of a few passing showers or thunderstorms this afternoon and tonight. The high today 87, tonight's low 71. Tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds, the better chance of rain south and east of here. The high 86. I'm James Spann of the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 87 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Alabama-related interviews, such as the one to follow with Mick the Mixter, Mick Gillespie, are brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker from Advantage Realty Group. Mick, where are you today? You're like, where's Waldo? Where's Mixter?
I'm in East Tennessee today. Got a little baseball, but I'm telling you what, Friday I'm going to be at Innisfree Friday night, and we'll get this thing going, man. It's football time.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, good time to plug that. Appreciate you bringing up. Lars and I are going to be doing our Friday shows at guess where? It's all about Innisfree. The free.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. All about the free. Nice.
Have you had their... $9.99 meat and three. Have you had their lunch yet?
You know, I'm a wings guy there. I love the golden barbecue sauce, the golden Irish sauce, or whatever they call it. That's great.
Well, we'll see you Friday in person. We got to start with baseball. What happened with Ronald Acuña Jr. last night at Coors Field? Just your thoughts on it, and is there a way to prevent this?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of scary. You know, I was at a game one time to see Cal Ripken Jr. And the Orioles, and some fans from Cuba jumped out on the field and, you know, and had a sign, and it was like a political protest, you know. And you're always worried, you know, something's going to happen. I met a guy named Rick Monday who played for the Cubs, and he was in a game against the Dodgers, and some people that didn't like our country were going to burn him.
I remember that.
Mm. Yeah, we talked a lot about it. You know, I'm very patriotic, you know, and I love America. So, you know, I just told him how I thought that was really awesome that he ran by and grabbed the flag. And then, you know, it's kind of a famous moment for baseball fans, you know. Like, and he ended up going to the Dodgers, and he's still there as a broadcast. So they're scary moments. I don't know what you can do to prevent stuff like this. Thank God it wasn't anything crazy other than just, you know, I mean, nobody was attacked. I mean, there was a time, do you remember the time where the Royals first base coach got jumped by two fans?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Father, son?
Yeah.
But I don't know what you do.
You put up the hooligan mask or the hooligan plexiglass that they do at soccer stadiums in Europe. I don't want to see it come to that, but it may be the answer. It won't be very fan friendly because people like this are ruining it for everybody. By the way, one more. What distinction does Rick Monday hold that no one else ever will? It concerns baseball.
I don't know. What?
He was the first player ever drafted.
Really?
Yep. I'm pretty sure I got that right.
Yeah, I just didn't know that.
Lars will look it up real quick.
I thought you were going to say he's the only Monday to hit a home run on Monday.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I thought so, too.
That's where I thought
Mick, have you seen this happen in minor league parks, or is this just mostly at the major league level when you have fans just playing out on the field?
I had one. There was one game, one Smokies game years ago, where a guy ran out on the field, and they ran around and they got him off the field, and there was a debate in the front office, you know, whether to prosecute or not, and you know, I was kind of like, hey, look, you know, you got to prosecute the guy because you can't accept that type of behavior, you know, even though it was funny, and I know that he didn't mean anything by it other than just to disrupt the game and get a laugh. I was at an LSU-Alabama game, and one of their fans jumped out and mooned us. I don't know if any of you guys remember that. It was before Saban got there, so it was back when LSU used to beat Alabama on the regular. They all laughed. I'm sure that guy went to jail. But I don't know. I just don't know. You don't want to turn it into a police state, you know what I mean? Like, you just don't want to make it feel like it's not a comfortable, safe environment. And so these things are kind of, they're rare. Although I'm sure you guys remember the kissing bandit that used to jump out in baseball. What was her name?
Morgana.
That's right. Yeah. And she was featured on This Week in Baseball. So I guess it all depends on the type of running out on the field that you're doing and what your goal is to accomplish. I mean, she was just out there. And people loved it when she ran out there. I think the players even loved it.
Yeah, do you remember when the Cincinnati Bengals fan ran onto the field and stole the ball from Brett Favre?
No.
And then he absolutely just got obliterated by security. As an announcer, in your, not necessarily on television, right? But like, how do you handle a situation like that? And how should television handle a situation like that?
Yeah, well, first, that reminds me of a story my father told me, being a Baltimore Colts fan. I guess somebody ran out and tried to steal the football from the Colts. And Artie Donovan, who, you know, I think he's the late, great Artie Donovan at this point, but one of my father's favorite players, lit the guy up. And my dad thought that was awesome. He loved it. He would tell that story, and I think I heard him say, you know, telling people a lot, you know, how he liked that. But when I'm announcing a game, I'm calling the action. You know, I remember where Kevin Harlan was doing like the play-by-play of, someone running out on the field. It was pretty funny. I'm the same way. I think it's entertainment. I look at what I do every night as entertainment. I try to be entertaining. I try to be funny. I try not to take things too seriously. Now, if I saw a guy trying to burn an American flag, it'd be different. But I guess it all comes down to the situation. I know on TV, they just don't show the guy. And that might be a smart strategy, too. But if it was me, I'd probably just show him. And, you know, because, I mean, what somebody's going to have it on their video phone anyway. So you might as well get the views.
We talked about this earlier. I've written a long story about fans running onto the field, and it can be somewhat comical, and it actually can change lives, but we sort of covered that. But all right, let's move on to Alabama.
Real quick, yep. I'm sorry to interrupt. Mike Curtis was the linebacker for the Colts that leveled that fan.
Oh, Mike Curtis. Okay, yeah. 32,
yeah.
Yeah, funny.
You can still find that video. It's hysterical. I guarantee you that guy never did it again. Anyway, I just had to get that little piece of trivia in.
That's good. That's good. Mick, much has been made in the national media about Nick Saban not releasing a depth chart. Your thoughts? Is this much ado about nothing, or is it actually a legitimate gripe that reporters are having?
Yeah, I was watching the press conference, and I heard him saying that he wasn't going to release the depth chart. And then I heard him explain why. And then I thought of Alabama media relations and the struggle that I'm sure they have trying to work with, you know, Coach Saban, who's definitely set his ways, and the media that they're there to work with. You know, we need a depth chart. And I understand that he doesn't want players transferring. And he's everything he said is actually right. I mean, once you put a depth chart out, now all of a sudden, you know, somebody's feeling good, somebody's not feeling good. He's right. Everyone knows who's going to play. They know who the better player is for his part. But at the same time, and this is something that I've noticed with Alabama and not with other schools, though. I just feel like a lot of times, like going to SEC media days and the head coach doesn't take the time to talk to you guys or talk to somebody at Tide or, you know, or go to some, you know, a station that covers the team in Huntsville or in Montgomery or wherever, you know, that those are the opportunities that, you know, you're supposed to have as a media person to feel like you're being rewarded for covering that team every day. We've gotten to the point with Alabama where they really don't care. I mean, like, whatever we're doing on a local level isn't that important to them, in my opinion. And throwing out a depth chart is kind of along those same lines, you know. I cover the Cubs, you know, and I know that's a pro team, you know, but it's also a team who has a huge fan base like Alabama does and a lot of fans, and I understand the challenges there, but we need a depth chart. I mean, if you're covering the game, you know, you need a depth chart. It's something that we've always, you know, that's kind of been part of the game. And then the other side part of this, and this isn't the first time that we haven't gotten a depth chart or they've been, you know, not wanting to give it out. But what happens in the state of Alabama, and thank God I don't do high school football broadcasts anymore, but you would go and do a high school broadcast, and because Nick Saban doesn't give out a depth chart, then you're playing against, you know, I don't know, some other team in the state, and now they don't want to give out a depth chart. Because, you know, whatever Nick Saban does is what everyone else follows, you know? So it makes our job a lot tougher, and when you're doing play-by-play, on top of that not having a depth chart, it becomes even more difficult. So, you know, I just wish that maybe they would move a little bit more towards appreciating and catering to the media that is covering them on a daily basis. But the way that this thing's trending is, you know, the SEC owns the SEC network. Well, they'll get a depth chart and don't think they won't. And, you know, and they'll get the interview with Nick Saban, but the local guys, you know, good luck, you know, and I hope that changes.
I think we're trending the exact opposite direction. You can't watch practices anymore. You have to be careful. You can't ask certain questions in a certain way. And the depth chart thing, and you can identify with this, particularly when you're doing football, what is the first and most important thing you can get from your team? A depth chart. That's what you make your charts out of. And that can't do you any good to get it Saturday morning because you can't do your charts then. You got to do it earlier in the week. But I imagine, like you were saying, with the SEC network, I'm sure Eli has one.
Well, I mean, you'd hope so. And Chris Stewart, you know, when he's doing the game. But, I mean, you understand what I mean by that, though. I know it's probably tougher for you guys because, you know, you got a radio show in Tuscaloosa and you know how feelings get hurt, and I'm sure I'm hurting somebody's feelings at media relations, and I don't mean it personal. You know, it's not directed at anyone. It's just when Auburn's coach is going everywhere and talking to everybody, you freeze, and you get a press pass if you need one at Auburn, and they're everywhere you turn around, and then your coach doesn't want to give you a depth chart, doesn't want to do an interview. It's like, you know what? The guy's not going to be there forever. Don't burn those bridges. It's really important, outside of the winning and losing, to establish great relationships in the media. Ask Mike Shula.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the number one topic is quarterback situation at Alabama pertaining to the depth chart. What do you think we're going to see on Saturday night at Bryant Denny?
You know, here's what my intel's telling me. I'm looking for Jalen Milroe to be the guy that takes the ball first. And he's got the experience. I think he's had a good camp, from what I understand. Tyler Buchner is going to be the guy that pushing for that job. He's taken the experience that he had at Notre Dame. He's smart. He gets the offense. That's helped him out a lot. He's really grown into the system. And Ty Simpson's got to keep working hard. He's got to make better decisions throwing the football. He's got a lot of talent, but the game speed right now is something that he's going to have to improve on.
Hey, can you hang through the break, Mick?
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right. We got several other things we'd like to talk to you about. Mick Gillespie is on Big Noon Sports, along with Matt, Lars, and Justin. Got a question I want to pose to you guys about the popularity, if I'm using the right word, of Nick Saban around the planet, Italy. We'll get to that on the other side of the break. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Built to win.
Touchdown, Alabama!
Built for championships.
Throws intercepted, Alabama!
Built by Bama.
Alabama is still Alabama.
Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide kick off the 2023 season against MTSU. Our coverage begins at 3:30 on your home for Alabama football.
Presented by the Birmingham Racecourse and Casino, I-459, exit 31. You could be a winner, too.
Guess this is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Big Noon Sports, Alabama-related segments and interviews are brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker, Advantage Realty Group. Hey, and speaking of sponsors, let's start this segment because I know you want to give a shout-out to one of your sponsors, and we already have to Innisfree. We will all be there Friday afternoon and evening, and wanted to make sure that you got a plug in for your folks.
Yeah, look, I don't do this often, but this one's really cool. One of the things that I loved about, you know, being a student at Alabama was how you would go into all the restaurants and the businesses around town, and they'd have those Daniel Moore prints from New Life Art and newlifeart.com. And I remember my first one, and you guys probably have them in your house too. The first one I got had Tank Connerly on there, the old equipment guy. It had Mike Dubose in the background. It was Gene Stallings' last game, you know, and I was so excited when I got it put up in my house. And now I have a ton of really cool ones. But they're having a 23% sale right now. It's the biggest sale they're going to have all year. It ends on Sunday. Bama tailgate, if you want to get your own. But I'm just, I mean, you guys have those things. They're the best, man. I mean, like, it's so exciting. Whether it's, yeah, I mean, like, and right now with you know, Bama tailgate, it's 23% off all of them except the new one that hasn't come out yet. So it's the time to do it.
Do you have a favorite?
Man, you know what? I think the one when we won in the Swamp in 99, that was my senior year, Sean Alexander. I that one has a special place in my heart. I've got one that Snake Stabler signed. You know, we worked with Snake over at Crimson Tide Sports Network, Run in the Mud. That one too. That one's in my house. The rest of them are in my studio. And I've got like one of each of the championship prints. And to go to those games and then have the print, you know, that's kind of something else that I really, so I guess it's just one of those guilty pleasures for me. You know, I walked by, I remember sitting with Cheryl Yingling at the 50-yard line of the LSU game, and we never saw LSU out by the 50, you know?
I think most Alabama fans would probably say goal line stand, and I think that might have been his first effort, or it wasn't, it's pretty close to the first. And I think it was because of the newness, the prints, you could kind of reach out and grab a piece of that game. And moving forward now, you would have to have a 10,000 square foot home to have all of them.
Oh, man, I have so many.
I've got some that aren't Alabama, too. You know, he just done some great prints for Auburn.
Incredible. I wouldn't have those. Those would make my wall. But I did have a friend come over one time and tell me that my house looked like the Bryant Museum, and I was, you know, that was a compliment to me, you know. So now 23% off of those prints. I mean, that's a great deal, and it's the only time they're going to do it. So Bama tailgate or Mick Gillespie, either one, when you go on there. But I hope that everyone gets that same feeling that I get when I get a new one. You know, like I just put it up and then I got to keep looking at it. Like I'm like a little kid.
Hey, Mick, this is prediction week for every reporter in the country who covers college football. So I just want to run through the conferences with you and just get your quick analysis. ACC seems like a two-horse race between Clemson and Florida State. Who are you taking in the ACC?
Yeah, look, it is a two-horse race, and Clemson's going to win that race again. This is going to be another one of those great seasons for Dabo, but that Florida State game could be epic. We'll see. I'm not ready to put Florida State there yet, and I'm definitely not taking Clemson. I thought Clemson, even though they lost to Tennessee in the bowl game, I really thought Dabo did a great job coaching last year with some issues on offense, and I think that he realized, you know, he had to make some changes on offense on his coaching staff, and he did that. I look for them to be the champion of the ACC.
Big Ten. This seems to me really like a three-horse race. Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State. Can Michigan beat Ohio State on November 25th and win their third straight Big Ten championship?
I grew up listening to Penn State on the radio. They were so big where I was from, you know, back when Joe Pop was there. And I don't want to say I'm full for them, but the fact that they have cool uniforms and, you know, and the nostalgia, I do always kind of hope that they're going to get into the mix, but it's not going to happen. It's going to come down to Ohio State and Michigan. Michigan has physically manhandled Ohio State at the line of scrimmage the last 2 years. There's a lot of pressure on Ryan Day to win this football game. And, Jim Harbaugh, maybe look, I mean, got into the playoff and it didn't go the way that they wanted to. He's going to miss the game. I just think there's a lot of distractions there for Michigan, and I'm going to take Ohio State to win and Michigan to come in second.
Big 12, you got Texas, Texas Tech, Kansas State, Oklahoma. I certainly lean Texas.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, and I'm buying into the hype. These Texas teams, you know, like Texas A&M last year, you see the talent that they have, and you know that they come from a state of high school football. And the coaching's there. We all know about Sarkisian. But they've got to go out there and execute. One of my buddies thinks that they're, you know, Ryan Brown, he thinks that Texas is going to win the league and get into the championship, you know? So if that happens, then that means they come to Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama. So I'm not ready to do that with them yet. I will say that they lead though on high notes and they win the conference.
And in the Pac-12, there's actually quite a bit of parity at the top. USC, Washington, Utah, Oregon, and even Oregon State. I think Oregon State's going to have a really good year. But, you know, with Caleb Williams, reigning Heisman Trophy winner, who looked great in week zero against subpar competition, I lean USC in the Pac-12. But I think Pac-12 it'll be fun to watch because there are some quality teams out west.
Well, I mean, I was watching the game, and I know it's only the first game that USC played, but the KA Flags football team when I was in college at Alabama played better defense than what I saw. And I know they won, but they weren't that impressive. But they have the talent, you know. It just always looks like all they want to do is just play offense. And I think at some point you got to play defense. But it's just hard to bet against them. Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, you got the coaches, you got the money out there. But I would not be surprised if Utah doesn't kind of throw a wrench into this.
And finally, the SEC, which we talk about every day. Is it Georgia, Alabama, LSU? Can they sneak in there? Can Tennessee rise up again? What are your thoughts in both the East and the West, and ultimately who wins in the SEC championship game?
Georgia's got a schedule that's paper soft, paper thin. I mean, they're going to run right through that schedule. So even if Tennessee beats them, I don't think that Tennessee's they're not going to beat Alabama again. They're going to lose another game along the way, if not more. I think Tennessee could potentially be better this year. overall than they were last year and have a worse record. But Georgia plays a schedule that it's a joke. I mean, it's not really even competitive compared to what any of the teams in the West are playing this season. But because of that, they're going to win probably all their games. And like I said, maybe they lose to Tennessee. So I'm putting them in the SEC championship game. And in the West, it's going to come down to, I think, three teams, not two. Alabama, LSU, and I'm falling into this trap again, but Texas A&M. I look at all the talent that the Aggies have, and now they got a new offensive coordinator. I think that the heat is on right now. And honestly, look, don't think that the offensive coordinator doesn't have his eye on that head coaching job, you know, and that big buyout is on. So sometimes that mix can go one of two ways. You know, sometimes it goes the wrong direction, but sometimes it brings out the best in you to have competition. But I'll tell you why I'm taking Alabama is that, and I want to say this because I know my aunt's listening, and anytime I say anything that could potentially be negative towards Nick Saban, and I don't mean it that way, but the media thing, I know she's not going to be happy with me. I love it. I love Nick Saban, first off. I wouldn't trade him for anyone in the world. I've long said what's good for Nick is good for Nick. And I love the fact that he seems so confident and relaxed. That tells me that this team is doing what he wants it to do. He's talking about, you know, depth, offensive line play. I don't think the clock's going to be as big of an issue as I initially thought after watching the first round of games. I mean, you're only shaving off a few plays, but I just don't think that Alabama's and Nick Saban are ready to be you know, a second or third team in the West. And I think they get in there and I think they beat Georgia handily for the SEC championship game,
handily?
Just like old times. Handily. I think they'd have beat him last year. And I've said that to you before, too. We would have had another Daniel Moore print that you could buy at, you know, at the store, Bama tailgate, if Alabama would have got the opportunity, but they didn't. So hopefully that happens, and I'm rolling with the tide, guys.
And what four teams do you have in the playoffs?
Alabama and Georgia. You know, they're going to probably lose to Alabama. And then I would say Ohio State and USC.
Yep, yeah, that's exactly what I have.
I'm on the Trojans bandwagon, too. I think there's another team. Brando talked about it yesterday, and then I've talked about it with several other people, that I don't know if you'd call them a dark horse or not, but Texas Tech's going to play some pretty good football this year.
Yes, keep an eye on Texas.
Mick, have a great day. Have a great broadcast, and we will talk to you next week. And New Life Art, 23% off.
Thanks, guys. Roll Tide.
Thanks, Mick.
All right, I'm going to fire off that question about popularity in sports when I get back. We get back on Big Noon Sports.
Weekday mornings at 6 a.m., The Martin Houston Show.
Join us tomorrow as we continue game week preparation for Alabama versus Middle Tennessee. We'll have a wild card Wednesday with a little bit of a Would You Rather Wednesday thrown in. We'll also have Scotty Hollins, Executive Director of Blueprint Ministry, with the Christian Moment of the Week.
Catch the Martin Houston Show from 6 to 7 weekday mornings on Tide 100.9.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky cloudy at times. We'll maintain the chance of a few passing showers or thunderstorms this afternoon and tonight. The high today 87, tonight's low 71. Tomorrow a mix of sun and clouds, the better chance of rain south and east of here. The high 86. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 87 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Well, we're deep into the fourth quarter. Thank you all for listening. Tell folks about BigNoonSports.com. You can follow us on Twitter. And, of course, you can listen to us daily in Anniston, Gadsden, and in Tuscaloosa, our flagship station, right there at Tide 100.9. All right, I'm trying to think of how I can word this, and if it comes out a little awkward, y'all live with me. And by the way, Justin, I want you to key your mic and throw in your contribution here as well. Who is right now the most quoted person in United States sports?
Right now, I'm going to say it's Nick Saban.
Justin, would you agree?
Most quoted, like most used?
Yeah, you know, you read the most quotes, you see him the most on television.
I could see Nick Saban, but I feel like that's not right. But I'll just roll with Lars, Nick Saban.
Well, I've been thinking about this is the top of the show, and I keep trying to think of someone else, and I can't. So, would you guys go as far as to say he is the most recognized person in sports?
The most recognized person in sports. I'm probably going to go Patrick Mahomes.
I might go LeBron.
I'd say, like, current player, it's LeBron easily.
Yeah,
that's right. But for coaches, yeah, absolutely, Nick Saban. Yeah.
And I can't think of a coach second. I mean,
you could throw John Madden or Belichick.
Belichick
maybe at the NFL. He would be at the NFL level, but I still think across the country, Saban is more. You see more quotes and more sound bites from Saban than you do Belichick. I'm almost positive of that. I don't even have to do research.
Well, no, you're probably right because Belichick rarely even talks. So,
guy, when he does, he's so condescending. He just it looks like he would rather, you know, have what we used to say bamboo shoots under his fingernails. It just looks, it's so painful to just watch him be, you know, be mean. Don't be mean. I can't imagine. I need to go with Rodak a little bit. I can't imagine being on that beat.
Yeah. And, you know, I've never covered a team day in and day out, but, in talking to the best beat writers that have gone through Tuscaloosa, right, over the last 10 years, they all tell me the same thing. Like, they love Nick Saban. Why? Because he talks and he tells stories and he's animated and he, you know, he'll give you something to think about and something to write about, like, every single time. I mean, we're talking about a freaking depth chart, right? And that is made national sports
news.
Depth chart. And, whereas in Mike Rodak, he noted this, you know, it's like trying to get blood from a stone to get Bill Belichick to say anything at all. And, you know, I'd still think of him as, you know, hey, we're moving on to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Cincinnati. You know, Nick Saban doesn't pull stuff like that. And I know Nick Saban can be intimidating when you're in that room, but the thing is, like, he's introspective and he is highly, highly intelligent and very articulate. And yeah, he has his own, you know, colloquialisms, just like we all do, our own sort of pet phrases. But I've always said, like, you know, when Nick Saban starts talking about his dad in particular, listen, because what he's about to tell you is something important to him. And if it's important to him, more than likely it will be important to, you know, everyone sort of listening to him. And I've always thought that Nick Saban is a person that you would want to cover. And you can tell that. I mean, there are reporters all around the country who would love to be on the Alabama beat, and it's all because of Nick Saban. And I loved what Mick Gillespie said. When it's good for Nick, it's good for Mick. And the thing is, Nick Saban has made our jobs, not necessarily easier, but it's become sort of just more high profile, right? I mean, if I don't think many people have written two books on Mike Shula, right? I've written two books on Nick Saban. I still feel that there's ample material out there. And, you know, that a lot of different things to explore. And so that's just my take on it. Like, you know, when people assume that covering Nick Saban must be a horror show, in fact, it's the exact opposite. It's because he gives you so much. He gives
even
a lot.
Even when he gets annoyed, he gives you something.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you agree, Matt?
Yeah, I would.
What was Bear Bryant like when in press conferences?
Oh, he could get very gruff. You know, depends on what kind of mood he was in. He could be very, very funny. He could sit after the news conference with a few select members of the media and smoke Chesterfields. But, you know, if you ask him a dumb question, he'd likely hand it right back to you. There are a lot of similarities in these guys. I know kind of from a physical stature, you know, from a stature, that they're vastly different. Because Bryant was 6'4", and he was a mountain of a man. Nick Saban's a smaller guy. But as far as their knowledge of the game, their ability to recruit, their ability to identify with families, ability to adapt and change with the games, 1, 2, 3, 4, they're all strikes or home runs, however you want to look at it, between both of them.
What would you say is the hallmark skill of Nick Saban? If you had to distill it into one sentence, what is it that Nick Saban does that's better than everybody else?
Recruit.
Absolutely. You know, 100%.
And that's down the law the minute he walked into the doors.
Yeah.
He said it's all about recruiting. And you know what? You know what the answer is if you ask that about Paul William Bryant? Recruit.
Yep.
I was going to say dancing. I mean, we've all seen the video of a coach busting a move. He's pretty good.
Actually, coming from a guy that can't dance at all, he is pretty smooth on the dance floor. I'd love to see what song would. Here's the question of the day. What song would Nick Saban sing at karaoke?
The Beautiful Ones by Prince. That's an inside joke.
I think.
Now we are not going to detail.
No, we're not going to. In fact, I'm going to move right along. I mean, well, you think, I don't know if he would ever do it, but I'll bet he'd do an Eagles song.
Yeah.
Like No More Cloudy Days. God, what a wonderful piece of work. But Justin, what is he going to break out with, some MC Hammer?
I think that's what I want to see, some MC Hammer or some like Ice Ice Baby or something, you know, just to see how far he can push his skills and really get moving.
I've never seen any film of him play. Have y'all?
Football? Yeah. Yes.
Not karaoke.
Yes, I've seen high school film. Black and white, foot green. Yes. It exists.
He was a quarterback and a DB?
Yes. Yes.
Evidently, he's a pretty good quarterback.
He's a good quarterback.
If memory serves, he
played against Joe Namath in high school, and I think he beat him. They're about the same age, aren't they?
Well, I think Namath's a lot older than him. But I'd have to look it up. I don't know. You'll probably look it up before we get out of here. Hey,
You're right. That doesn't work. Namath is 80.
One more note from the world of NASCAR. Not surprised by this, but he'll be missed. Kurt Busch is retiring at the age of 45. I didn't like him too much in the very beginning, but I did like him later. So, anyway, so long, Kurt Busch. I'm sure we'll see you on the broadcast. All right, gentlemen, good show. Thank you. Let's do it again in 22 hours. Hey, that's the same number as, what's his name, Jimmy Long.
22. That's right, 22.
Have a great day.
Oh, yes.